The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck program. Today, an unconventional kind of program, one that you really need to listen to and digest, as we have the President of the United States saying, yes, it is possible we could have a major, major conflict with North Korea. And who doesn't feel good about Donald Trump making that decision? We also have to worry about our economy. Daniel DiMartino Booth has written a book that is a must-read called Fed Up, The Insider's Take on Why the Federal Reserve is Bad for America. What is coming? What is your retirement look like? What does America look like when the lie is finally revealed? Somebody from the inside who predicted the 2008 crash is here to tell us what's coming next. Daniel DiMartino Booth joins us right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Danielle, welcome to the program.
Happy to be here.
I had you last week on television, and you took the breath away of the audience that was in for the show. And you are somebody that I wish I would have known in 2006 as I searched the world for anyone who is brave enough to say the emperor has no clothes, and now you are doing it again, except this time you really have a ton of credibility because you've already predicted the last one, and you became really very important to the Dallas Fed, and you were on the inside doing all of the research and really trying to warn everyone inside, this thing is, the emperor has no clothes, part two. I want to start, before we get to your dire warning and some of the amazing stories of what it was like behind the scenes with TARP and everything else, I want to start with you looking up at the stars in Maine, saying, I'm an accomplice. I'm complicit in this. I've got to get out and warn people.
Except I had just signed on for 4 more years at the time. Richard Fisher was certainly considered to be a maverick, and it had become exceedingly difficult to do my job. The PhDs, the academics in the research department were increasingly saying, somebody's got to put a muzzle on this woman. She's saying things that are going to embarrass us in Washington, D.C. among the most elite of the elite. And so what Fisher did was recognize what was going on. He wanted to maintain this one voice of objectivity, if you will. So he jettisoned me from the research department and gave me autonomy in exchange for staying through his last year at the Fed. He said, I'll give you freedom. You give me 4 more years. And I said, fine, done, deal.
So what did that feel like? Why did you do that? You knew it, at least after that you signed it, you started to reflect and go, I am part of this.
Well, I was part of the minority.
Right.
I mean, I was part of,
if it's not me,
the fight never ended.
Right.
The fight kept going until the day I walked out the door.
Right.
At which point they were like, don't let it hit you on the way out.
Right. So
bye-bye.
You were feeling, because we hear this from people all the time in Washington, if it's not me, Who's going to fight? Somebody has to be the dissenting voice.
And, you know, there were people who came on, even in Washington, and they ended up leaving after their minimum of 2 years. Because even people from academia, Jeremy Stein was on the Federal Reserve Board for 2 years. And he took a gracious out. He said, well, I better get going now because Harvard's going to give up on me. And I'm like, yeah, come on. The door's always going to be open at Harvard. Let's get real. But he did his minimum of 2 years and left because he tried to push back and failed. So Fisher was not alone. There were others who tried to speak up. But the majority was so overwhelming that it was just impossible to make your way and be heard.
Would you agree that the biggest heist, the biggest theft in all of human history is being perpetrated right now by the Fed?
The Fed, the Bank of Japan, the European Central Bank, the Bank of England. It helps to understand that even though the Federal Reserve stopped its quantitative easing campaign, so to speak, stopped expanding the size of its balance sheet by buying U.S. treasuries, by buying mortgages. That's been over 2 years now. But there are other central banks. We've just come through a record period of buying throughout the world. And investors know, generally speaking, that their back is covered. Their losses will be contained. It's the assumption they work under. I said investors. I didn't say Main Street.
So let's start here with a warning of what is to come. And then I want to go backwards. Okay. I want to take you back to when you first saw this housing bubble is going to break and nobody would listen. And take you also back because you've started on Wall Street and you've found that to be a circus and wanted to expose that.
Yes, I have worked in multiple sausage factories.
Yes, you have.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Okay, so let me first take you to the warning to the average American of what you believe is coming.
So if you turn on any business news network, you're going to hear all kinds of comforting commercials. We're going to take a commercial break now. So they go, and you know, inevitably you're on a beach mm-hmm. and life is looking good and the dog is running alongside you and they'll say, XYZ firm, you know, retirement, it's yours mm-hmm. for the taking. Mm-hmm. And what are they selling exactly? They're selling the beauty of diversification. As long as you spread your risk throughout your bonds and your equities and your real estate, you're going to retire just fine. That's not what happens when central banks are manipulating prices, which they are, the price of interest, the most important price out there. When that inevitably ends poorly, which it has several times since Alan Greenspan took office in 1987, what investors find out and what baby boomers have found out not once but twice is that there's no place to hide. Everything in your 401k, everything in your IRA, they all behave the same, and that is badly.
And you're talking about a crash much different than 2008.
The problem today, as I see it, is that in 2007, 2008, by then the boogeyman had been identified and housing had rolled over. You know, a good friend of mine is Arthur Cashin. He's been on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange mm-hmm. for over 50 years. So he's seen a few things mm-hmm. in his time. And he said recently that this feels a lot more like 1987 to him. And it feels a lot more like he wasn't around in 1929, but had he been, from what he heard when he was a young man on the floor of the exchange, it's the melt-ups that we see in the market. It's the days when we have back-to-back and the Dow Jones Industrials puts on 500 points. And on that same day, the Wall Street Journal will be out with a story that says, you know, we're going to have to start valuing stocks differently because it's different this time. And you know, the hair in the back of your neck just stands up and you're like, whoa, don't use those words. Don't say it's different this time. That never ends well. But it's the mania sensation, the sensation that it is just everybody's got to get in. These are the times that really frighten me.
And this time, I mean, when I was back at Fox, I remember doing the pension funds and trying to explain them to the American people. And there's no way that these pension funds work. There's just no way they work.
It is impossible.
Right.
It is a mathematical impossibility. Absolutely. People do not understand that you cannot make up for multiple years of missing the amount you're supposed to make on behalf of pensioners investing their money. You cannot have a 6 or 7% per year shortfall compared to what you should have made and expect on planet Earth to make up. It's just, it's a mathematical impossibility. And what they're doing to compensate for that is putting retirees and pensioners' money into increasingly risky investments. We'll put it into a distressed real estate fund that, by the way, has no ability to, has no liquidity, so you can't get the money out. This is just great. Let's all just, it's like NyQuil, but it's not. It's not going to help you sleep at night.
So when that crashes or when people figure out this is, what happens to society?
You know, it's hard to say. You can't get the Chicago, you can't get the Illinois legislature, you can't get the most crippled pension in the world to try and right the ship. They're at a constant loggerheads. And by the way, Chicago's got the highest murder rate in the country. I ask you if there's, I'm not saying there's causality, but I am saying it's not a coincidence. And eventually what happens is that you continue to cut public services like firemen, like trash pickup, like policemen. You have to start cutting into the bone of what we as average Americans expect and anticipate is ours by right because we pay our taxes.
Same thing's happening here in Dallas right now with the police.
Who knew that you could have a run on a pension?
I know.
I went, wait a minute. I know about runs on banks from my school days, but I've never heard of a run on a pension.
Oh, I have to tell you, if I had a pension and I was close to retirement or I was ready, I would be in there demanding my pension right now too. I'd take you know, dimes on the dollar for my pension.
And a lot of people want it to. And lo and behold, it almost ran out of money.
Yeah. So then what happens?
So that's the question. So then what happens? Because if you're some schmo who's not been on a pension and you've been saving your pennies in a 401k, whittling it away constantly for years, why should your property taxes go through the roof to top off a pension that's had a run and been depleted? These are really difficult questions.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com. Mercury. 888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
So we have about 3 minutes, 4 minutes here. So give me the history of the Fed quickly, so people who don't really understand
minutes, so don't worry about
it. No, I mean, just
a general
look. It is not part of the federal government. It is a private corporation.
It's a quasi-private organization. So after the expenses of the district presidents, district banks are tended to, then they have to send anything extra they have off to Washington. So it's kind of a hybrid, if you will. But I mean, the dollar in your wallet, the Federal Reserve's job is to protect its buying power. Since 1913, it's protected 3 of those cents of your dollar.
Right.
And it's also supposed to make sure that there are as many people in the workforce as possible, which is a problem because you don't want a bunch of professors trying to maximize employment. You want that in the hands of something called the private sector. But they're mandated with doing it, and so they do. And by keeping interest rates at artificially low levels in order to try and induce hiring, they end up creating a hotbed of financial instability.
Right. And we got through the Great Depression of, what was it, 21, because the Fed didn't do anything. The federal government slashed taxes and slashed spending. The Fed did nothing. And we got through it in 18 months. In 1929, that's when the federal government and the Fed really started to experiment.
Tinker.
Yes. And they have only gotten worse.
It's like they tanker now. We just made up a new word.
Right. And so now we have, when we hear the Democrats talk about income inequality, it's not really the Republicans' fault. You believe it's the Fed's fault.
I actually go so far as to call out Noam Chomsky because it is the dovish cavalcade. It is the Democrats leading the Fed who have been primarily responsible for income inequality and the growth of that divide over the past decade to the widest on record.
Okay, so a lot of people in our audience will say income inequality, there's always going to be income inequality.
Of course there is.
Yeah.
But as wide, excuse me, a few years ago we surpassed what it was in 1927, and we've just kept on going because professors believe in trickle-down. Well, trickle-down is a myth. Companies have not taken the largesse provided by the Federal Reserve and done much beyond buying back their shares.
Trickle-down is a myth.
Sorry.
I've never been hired by a poor guy. I mean, when I know that if I get tax cuts, I know as a company owner, I'm going to hire and expand. Now, because of the Fed and because of what Washington is doing, I'm actually going to save this time around. We were just talking about this with the new tax cuts. I'm actually, as a business owner, going to save a lot of that money because I know tough times are coming. And so I'm not going to hire because of the policies in Washington. Is that why trickle-down is a myth? Or
for the past decade, trickle-down has been a myth because if you're Joe Q CEO and you know that the Fed's very visible hand is creating an environment in which you're running your business that is highly artificial,
okay,
you're right. You're not going to invest. You're going to wait until the Fed's out of the way.
Right. So, So I think we're saying kind of the same thing. Okay. When we come back, I want to take you back to you on Wall Street and seeing the game playing and saying, "Wait, this is rigged," and then headed towards the Fed to help them expose Wall Street and jumping into the fire. Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Daniel DiMartino Booth, an insider's take on why the Federal Reserve is bad for America. Fed Up is the name of the book. I love the dedication. She said, I dedicate this book to every hardworking American who wakes up in the morning asking themselves, what went wrong? And I think what's coming in the next couple of years is going to have people, many more people asking that with probably their fists out in front of them.
You know, I think that we are reaching, I don't want to be a scaremonger in any way, shape or form, but I think that the election taught us that we are reaching a boiling point mm-hmm. in this country, in France, in Italy. There are too many young, energetic, intelligent, and yet disconnected people out there who need to be part of a viable and vibrant workforce. And you cannot contain that anger indefinitely before something goes wrong.
Let me go back to your time on Wall Street. You worked on Wall Street, and you kind of saw that from the inside. Were pretty disgusted by it. You came to Dallas after 2001, after the 9/11 tragedy, for obvious reasons. You started exposing the game on Wall Street through the Dallas Morning News, and Richard Fisher, head of the Fed, read some of your articles and said, "We need her kind of thinking around here." Now, Richard Fisher was one of the guys who you could kind of trust in the Fed because he would buck the system. He had some common sense in him.
He didn't mind getting his wrist slapped.
Yeah. He was a brave, brave guy. You come in, you start doing research, and you start seeing the problem with the housing bubble, and no one will listen to you.
My hair was kind of on fire. It really was. And I kept thinking, there's a movie that came out years ago called Weekend at Bernie's, where they kind of prop up a dead guy for the bulk of the movie. Right. And I kept thinking maybe I was in the presence of people who'd actually been embalmed. I'm like, pointing at them going, do you not see what's happening here? Is it just me? Because millions of people are going to lose their homes. This will not make millions of people happy. No, real estate is a local thing. We haven't seen nationwide home prices since the Great Depression. That's what Alan Greenspan said. That's what Ben Bernanke said. And if they said it, it's true. So it's going to be a local situation, and it's going to be contained, and everything's going to be fine. And I'm going, really? You think so, huh? What about that whole nationwide banking thing that really hadn't existed before? And have you seen this guy named Angelo Mozilla who runs Countrywide? Forget for a fact, the minute that he's orange, but do you really think that it's any mistake that all these subprime lenders have cropped up overnight, and that, somebody who's making $25,000 a year is in a $500,000 mansion? The math used to not work there, but it does mysteriously today. I mean, help me out here.
Explain why the subprime mortgage thing happened, because people will blame that on some people will blame that on the Democrats, saying we have to get everybody into a home. And that's partially true, but that's not the game.
But it was also bipartisan. I mean, every politician and people love to hear that. It's the American dream. So what if you can't afford it?
But was the driving force from politics, or was it from the banks?
No, it was the banks. It was the credit rating agencies.
Explain those two things.
Okay. The banks wanted paper. They wanted product. They wanted their little widgets, as I said last week. They wanted things that they could put inside of a security and sell for a big fat fee off to investors. It was one of the most glorious times on Wall Street because the fees were enormous. But you can't sell something on Wall Street if it doesn't have the general health good stamp of approval. You can put this in your body and it'll make you good. That's where the credit rating agencies came in. And as they might have said, well, Berkshire Hathaway is this great big company run by this man named Warren Buffett. So we're going to give him a AAA credit rating. And this subprime toxic piece of garbage mortgage, well, we're going to give it also a AAA credit rating. And isn't that special? It makes it a lot easier to sell that way. And it also involved investors turning a blind eye, not doing their homework, not performing adequate due diligence, and saying, well, it's got a AAA credit rating, so therefore I'll buy it. And you had the real estate lending community, these mortgage brokers that were operating many of them out of their trunks, making more money than they ever had. All the real estate agents that were saying, people might have been going, God, this seems like home prices have gone up a lot. Should I really be buying in here? Oh, yes, screaming bargain. There was a lot of complicity that was required beyond the politicians and beyond the Federal Reserve.
Including us who walked in and some were told, oh, I don't even need to see how much you make. You don't need to prove your name. And don't worry about that. And we will sit there because we want that home. We want that whatever it is we're buying.
Oh, yeah.
And we later scream victim, but we're not victims. We're part of it, too.
Look, they were called liar loans. There were some mortgages that actually could grow as a factor of time. You skip a payment. Why bother? There were companies like Countrywide that you had a guy with an X-Acto knife cutting out the income window. This is fraud we knew was perpetrated that has never been, it's never managed to get to court properly.
Why?
But we knew that there was, well, you tell me about the era in which these things blew up. I'm sorry, but it didn't take a prosecutorial genius to figure that one out because the fraud was known. The fraud was flat out in your face, and yet it was never prosecuted. We had no perp walks.
So why? Honestly, why? Because everybody is connected? Everybody's part of it?
I think it's a failing of the prosecutors that we've had over the past 10 years. Really, I do.
Nobody wanted to.
I'm telling you, you did not need a legal genius to figure this one out.
Right.
And lo and behold, you ended up with even more people getting angrier because this was not Charles Keating and the Keating Five and the perp walk on the evening news that gives the public some sense of satisfaction that somebody went to jail. We never had that.
In fact, because of TARP, those perps now have been taught, oh my gosh, I got away with it and I can do it again. And I'll still have all my money.
And there was this lovely little thing called Dodd-Frank. Dodd-Frank. Let's see. Dodd-Frank and another gentleman by the name of Obama. The three largest recipients of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac campaign contributions. But I digress. But there's this little thing called Dodd-Frank that was supposed to make the biggest banks smaller. So that they would never again be too big to fail. And what did it do?
Made the big banks bigger.
It institutionalized too big to fail. Now they're gigantic, and you've seen a hollowing out of community banks that serve people in rural areas of this country that have much less access than they used to pre-Dodd-Frank to a banker.
So when they, I mean, in your book, you talk about how Richard Fisher was, and I was reading it to the guys before you came in, how Richard Fisher, at one point, they were voting for zero interest rates. And he said, look, guys, I just talked to a CEO of a bank who borrowed $40 million and he paid $250 for it. This is outrageous. This is outrageous. They were getting all of these loans. They were getting the free money. But the average person and the person who 70% of all jobs are created by small business owners.
That's right.
And they're not able to get a loan.
Mm-mm. I mean, credit card lines evaporated overnight. A lot of small business owners used those credit lines from their credit cards for operating income to keep their businesses up and running. And yet you've got the biggest banks on planet Earth that can borrow for nothing, essentially. And Fisher's argument was that you're administering the patient the wrong medicine. It is not the level of interest rates that are the problem here, people. Back off. If you lower interest rates to the zero bound, do you know you're going to take down retirees with you to the slaughter?
Right. You're going to take down the pensions. Oh. All of it's going to fall apart.
Right. Life insurance companies can't operate in this environment, period. That you need a curve in the yield curve. I don't want to throw a technical term out there, but we're not in a natural world with interest rates at zero. It just makes no sense. And he tried to say that, and the professors gave him the pushback and said, our models tell us it needs to be at zero before we can start blowing up our balance sheet.
You said that in August of 2007, this whole thing was designed. Everything that we found out about in November when there was an emergency meeting and, oh my gosh, everything is going to come apart. You said the Fed decided all that months before and designed all of this.
When I sat down to write Fed Up, I thought I knew a lot about the Federal Reserve. When I found out about the Bernanke Doctrine, it has a name. Bernanke and Doctrine are both capitalized. This plan that was cooked up in private in Jackson Hole in August 2007 with Bernanke and his closest lieutenants, I was sickened. I was mortified. And again, I know a lot about the Federal Reserve, but I didn't know that you could take a small few off and decide in private the fate of a country. It didn't sit right with me.
I want to pick it up there on the decision of a fate of a country in just a few minutes. The name of the book is Fed Up. It's an insider's take on why the Federal Reserve is bad for America.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
A group of men led by Ben Bernanke come up with something called the Bernanke Doctrine in Jackson Hole. This is August 2007. It's a secret meeting to where, remember the panic, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, this just happened and we didn't know what to do. So we all gathered together and somebody had to do something. You found the Bernanke Doctrine in the Fed and realized, wait a minute, that this was all planned before it ever happened.
Mm-hmm. And that's how really brilliant academics operate. They whip a model out, and it really doesn't matter what's happening on planet Earth, but they plan accordingly. And the plan involved and required getting interest rates to zero as a first requirement before the Fed could start buying up treasuries and buying up mortgages to blow up its balance sheet, which before this all started was around 860 some odd billion. Today we know it's 4.5 trillion. Globally, QE, quantitative easing, the global balance sheet, if you will, is pushing 20 trillion in central bank purchases.
There's no way to ever pay, but there's not enough cash in the world to pay any of that.
We're going to have to send my mother has a bat phone to God, I like to say.
Yeah.
She's going to have to pick up the phone and make a call because it's only going to be his checkbook that'll be big enough.
Right. So when this eventually crashes, and I want to get into this next hour, when this eventually crashes, you're talking about a global reset.
It will be global, and we are connected. We're just not as friendly as we used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I saw in the news a few days ago an aircraft carrier on the water with a bunch of red flags on it. So the Chinese, they didn't really do a good job on their first aircraft carrier, but their second one looks pretty good. So this is great. We're going to have a currency war erupt, and it's going to be global, and I wonder where that leads us.
Yeah, well, we've seen it before.
We have.
We've seen it before.
It's been a while.
And yeah, it has been a while, but I, you know, even with North Korea, I did a special on North Korea last night, and the main point I wanted to get off on North Korea was people in the press are saying, looks like Donald Trump might start another war. No, this isn't another war. This is not Iraq. This is not Afghanistan. This is something that would be of the size of World War II, should it begin. We're in a different category, and the same with the financial markets. When all of this comes and hits, it's a different category. This generation has never seen before.
If you consider the economic players, Russia, China, they're the ones who back North Korea, biggest border in the world.
Back in just a second.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. We are going to spend the next few minutes talking about what is coming in your world. What does the world look like? If you're buying a house like Stu is, if you think the economy is going to start roaring to life, are we on the verge of exponential growth and America coming roaring back? We're going to give you a peek into the real world, and we begin right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Danielle DiMartino Booth is the author of the book Fed Up. She was an insider at the Fed. She saw 2008 coming, the crash. Nobody would listen to her. She was kind of shunned. Then she became a genius. And the Fed gave her her own little special office. But they still wouldn't listen to her on what's coming now. And what's coming now is not good. We're in the longest recovery, if you will, if you want to call it that, the longest recovery in American history. And GDP growth is anemic at best.
Punk.
I mean, it's what was the growth today?
0.7%.
Wow. America.
Yes.
On fire.
You can hang your hat on that one, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's crazy.
It was 1.6% for all of last year in 2016, the lowest growth rate in 5 years.
I always hear the Obama administration, the officials, and the veterans of that administration claiming the whole longest recovery thing. Yeah. Like it's a positive. Like, hey, we really have done this, and it's lasted a long time. In reality, that just means it was really slow and anemic.
Right.
Right? And that's all that means.
And it because it's all fake, none of it is actually... nobody ever felt any of it because it was fake, and it was small. There was no chance. The green shoots of the economy, if you will, mm-hmm. were all smothered. They're all smothered by keeping the crap alive.
There was no Miracle-Gro whipped out. None.
None.
No Miracle-Gro.
Because the forest wasn't allowed to burn down.
Now, there you go. You know, the interesting thing about the Federal Reserve and that 2008 decision to go to the zero bound, so to speak, to go to zero on interest rates, was there was so much pride involved. Because they knew that the experiment had failed in Japan. And that what Japan ended up with as a result of this failed experiment was a bunch of zombie companies, deadwood, if you will. And that's your forest that never burned down.
It's the
there were companies that
wave.
Needed to go out of business.
Yes.
They needed to go away. There was capacity that needed to come out of so many different industries. And if you lower interest rates to zero, you're going to keep the junk barn market up and running so that cruddy companies continue to gain access to debt funding. They stay alive and you eventually you stifle innovation and the ability for new companies to be born into this environment because you just create a bunch of festering sores for the economy.
So let's go here. If you are...
That's a technical term.
Right. If you are... let's say I'm 52, 53, and I just sat with a bunch of stock investor types, and they said, Glenn, yes, the stock market's going to correct, but you have plenty of time. And I said, no, I don't think so. And they said, Glenn, it always does. If you look at the long term. Look at the long term. And I said, yes, except for the Great Depression. And they said, well, that was a once in a lifetime event. And I said, I'm sorry, is anybody at this table, were they alive during the Great Depression? Because almost everybody who had the Great Depression is dead.
Yep.
So it's a new lifetime. And they're just in denial that something like that could and will happen.
You know, one of the wisest things I learned when I first started on Wall Street, and it stuck with me, is that stocks have to get really cheap, before there is kind of this entry point of a lifetime.
Yes.
That every single stockbroker today will tell you is every day, because every day is a good day. Every day is a good day to get into the market, as long as you've got 90 years in front of you,
right,
from here. But one of the most intelligent things I heard was that until you get valuations down to a certain level, and it's a technical term, it's a single-digit price-to-earnings ratio, and it's a price level, if you will. Well, we haven't been there since 1982, and yet most people in the business of selling stocks will tell you that it's okay, it's different this time.
But it's never, that's the name of a book that everybody should read. It's different this time. Because it never is different.
It never is different, but they will tell you it's different.
Right. Okay. So, what are you looking for to happen as a catalyst to having this whole thing fall apart? Like, I knew, what I said in 2006 was, watch the price of oil, because if the price of oil gets up to, I think I said, a sustained level of 150, that the average person could not afford it, and they'd start, mm-hmm, their housing would start to fall apart.
Sure.
And I think it went up to 130.
140, when it, I think, right?
Yeah, when it fell apart.
Yeah.
So I was watching oil for the housing. What are you watching?
I've been watching car sales really closely because
car sales,
because when oil fell out of bed, it also opened the door. General Motors just reported earnings, and they were driven by truck sales. So when oil prices fell, there was this gigantic beneficiary called the car industry, and Americans were finally feeling less pain at the gas pump. So they felt that their budgets could handle a new car payment. So, and a big new car payment with a big, it can hold 40 gallons car payment. And so they went out and bought a lot of cars. And Wall Street had their back. Subprime automobile lending took off for the moon. So anybody who could fog a mirror, remember we used to say that about something else. Anybody who could fog a mirror could buy a car. And that really was the baton handoff that prevented the crash in oil prices from having a more detrimental effect on overall economic growth. So to your point, it allowed us to stay at a low level for a little bit longer.
You can extend those loans out now for those automobiles.
84 months.
Forever.
Wait, did you say a mortgage or a car loan?
Right.
So are you assigning negative intent here? Because it's like, I look at some of these problems we've had. You talked about the models of the economy. And I think, like, a lot of times it seems that we confuse smart people for scientists, right? it's like the idea that someone can build a really fancy computer model that might be really intelligent and based on a lot of interesting things,
mm-hmm,
doesn't mean that it's the same as gravity and it falls the same level every single time.
We also look at, yep, smart people and say, well, they've got to be, they can't be bad people. I mean, if they see this coming,
they're only trying to line their pockets. What's wrong with that?
So you do assign greed at the upper level.
Look, again, I'm a bit Fed-centric, if you hadn't noticed. But zero interest rates, it invites a lot of bad behavior. So if you're Joe Q billionaire private equity kingpin living up on Park Avenue, and this money's just sitting there saying, take me. Well, you're going to take it. You're going to take it all the way to Plano, Texas, which is used car subprime borrowing central, because we have very friendly usury rates here, and you're going to fund the birth of a subprime lender. And that's where the bulk of the growth has come from. It's come from private equity guys, because they know that they can go charge 18, 19, 20%, make a decent return, and that they, you know, they've been told that the new technology for repossessing cars actually makes their investment that much safer, because when the borrower who's buying something they know they can't afford, you, the private equity guy, you're the first one who knows they can't afford it. You're going to take advantage of the situation anyways. But it's even more elegant this cycle, because you just hit a kill switch and, you know,
the engine won't go.
The engine doesn't turn on. So, but again, this lies at the feet of the Fed, because you're not going to be a private equity investor trying to dream up ways to make money if it's not free.
If the interest rates were left alone, the system would work itself out, and you wouldn't have to worry about, I can't make money because I can't make any interest on anything that's normal. Yep. So I've got to go look at these risky things if I want to make money.
That's right. And that's why you haven't seen companies investing in plant and equipment and in growing organically from the inside out. Because in a zero interest rate environment, it's really hard to do the math, and it's hard to make an investment decision.
Okay, I want to come back, and I want you to talk about a couple of things. I want you to talk about what the average person should do. Should you buy a house? Is there, you know, is there a recession, or is it a depression, or is it a global depression coming? I would like to spend a little bit talking to you about the actual currency to digitization. If we're looking at a cashless society and a negative interest rate from banks, where they're killing the saver, they're just going to kill the saver. I'd like to get your opinion on that when we come back.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
So let's have an important, let's start with the tax cuts. We're with Daniel DeMartino Booth, and she's the author of a book that everybody should read called Fed Up, and it will give you a real look at how this game is played, and it is rigged against the average person. Mm-hmm. The taxes and the tax cuts, we were having this discussion on the air this week, and me as the business owner, I look at this and say, okay, 15% tax rate for corporate, that's great. If it would have happened 8 years ago, that would have been great, and I would have deployed a lot of money. And I've said this for a long time, cut my taxes and I will create jobs.
Yep.
Now, with the debt, the deficit, the spending that's out of control, the digitization of dollars, the Fed's balance, the possibility of catastrophic war on the horizon, I'm sorry, but you give me that tax rate, and me as a business owner, I'm going to take that money and I'm going to hold on to it, because I might need that money to keep my doors open in rough times.
Yes, the uncertainty factor has gone through the roof. The opportunity to really ignite some economic growth through tax cuts should have arrived after the crisis.
Correct.
There would have been an idea.
Yeah.
Right, you know, kind of when the whole country feels like it's been knocked down, you might help it pick itself up again with tax cuts then.
Correct.
We can all grow together. But today, third longest expansion in U.S. history, and it's felt terrible for most people. People know that this economy has been in quote-unquote recovery for a really long time. And they get a sense. I mean, as much as the government would like to hope that the average American is stupid, people with common sense understand when things have gotten to be long in the tooth. And, you cannot prevent a batten down the hatches mentality. You cannot will businessmen and into this, expanding their business if they're uncertain about what's to come.
Right. And this is, they're not even passing it this year. That's not coming into effect now. They're talking.
Are we still in April?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, we're still, and they're talking about 2018?
Why? And or what are the ramifications of that?
Well, the ramifications are we're in recession by the time the tax cut comes through.
And what happens
it's like
when
the tree falls in the forest?
What happens when you have a tax cut at that time?
Well, I think it all gets saved. I think none of it gets deployed. Possibly. You know, there's no certainties here, but I can guarantee you that any business person worth their salt, if they're in recession, is going to be doing everything they can to protect the franchise.
Right.
Not grow it.
How much of this is natural because we are on the verge of the industrial revolution style change because of technology. So we're going to have a burn it down to the ground kind of situation because nothing of the old world, if you will, is really that valuable in the world that we're going to enter into. For instance, the auto industry. Mm-hmm. Who's going to buy cars when, you know, my car, I can buy a car,
right,
and then while I'm in the office, it's out doing work for me, taking people to jobs, picking them up at the airports. I mean, just that one change completely changes,
sure,
the economic world.
Mm-hmm.
So let me rephrase this.
Automation is coming.
Right.
A lot of it.
Right.
And a lot of industries.
And the politicians keep saying, we'll bring your jobs back. They're not going to bring your jobs back. And your jobs are most likely, the ones that are still here, are gone. McDonald's. It's those entry jobs. They're gone.
Look, I use the example of the energy industry. When oil prices crashed, the energy companies that decided that they wanted to stay in business, they tapped into technology that didn't exist the last time energy prices crashed, and they figured out how to replace employees with machines, such that if oil prices recovered to a certain level, they could hit a button.
And that's going to happen again. So then what does the average person do when we come back?
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Final few minutes with Daniel DiMartino Booth. An insider's take on why the Federal Reserve is bad for America. The book is called Fed Up. She predicted what was coming in 08. She saw the behind-the-scenes plotting and planning. It is a deceitful and spooky world and high finance. And she is trying to warn people now what's really going on so you can prepare somewhat for what's coming or what possibly is coming.
Yeah, and what I wonder is, do you think that a total economic collapse is a real concern?
You know, I don't know, but what I can tell you is that other episodes that have been smaller in terms of the buildup have ended really badly. And what's worse is that even though you could argue that a lot of United States-based banks have cleaned up their balance sheets over the past few years, the same cannot be said for other countries, and we're just as interconnected as we once were. Mm. So there's We're more vulnerable than we have been.
If Deutsche Bank went
under. For instance, if Deutsche Bank blew up like it threatened to do last year.
Right. I mean, that looks really bad.
Oh, well, again, that's why they don't use the word contagion lightly, because it reminds you of things like the plague.
But it is a financial plague.
Exactly.
And what did we find out? They had something like $72 trillion worth of
derivatives.
I mean, it's frightening.
You know, Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, she can bail out Greece while she sleeps. That's easy enough. Mm-hmm. Deutsche Bank?
No way.
I'm sorry. That's a big ticket item.
And Deutsche Bank goes down. We all go down?
Well, again, we are interest rates have been lower for longer than they've ever been in the history of mankind, which means that assets, stocks, bonds, commercial real estate, high-end residential real estate,
are all high.
All of it is more overvalued than it's ever been outside of the stock market in 2000. But that does not help me sleep at night. But again, we've come through a period of central bankers monkeying with asset prices for longer than they ever have. That means that we're more vulnerable than we've ever been. And the longer these things draw themselves out, the less easy it is to identify what contagion will look like when it starts to spread.
When the banks, my theory has been in the last few years that, you know, this negative interest rate and the states over in Europe saying, oh, you can give everybody a haircut. I just think that's what's coming. The banks know that a bailout isn't going to be acceptable to the people anymore.
Right.
So they've written a bail-in to all of their contracts, which we all click. I agree. They've changed it. So a bail-in basically is, I'm just going to take a percentage of everybody's savings, or at worst case scenario, they've moved the individual depositor into the last position to have their money refunded in case of a bankruptcy. So the average person loses with the banks. So the best thing to do is to digitize money and trap your money into a digital bank, because otherwise I'm going to take my money out of there.
And we wonder why sales of 1984 have gone through the roof.
Right. Does that sound crazy?
Absolutely.
Wait. Does that theory sound crazy? Like
no,
it could be?
It doesn't.
Right, okay.
I wish it did. I really do. But if you ask, unless you're going to tell me that there's going to be a complete and total revolution at the Federal Reserve, and last I checked, Trump said, I like her, I respect her.
Yeah.
So unless there's going to be a revolution at the Federal Reserve, then the academics' next line of defense is negative interest rates and digitization and forcing consumers to spend.
So, Danielle, how does the average American prepare for something like that?
I'd rather be early than wrong. I'd rather have my powder be dry.
And would you buy a house today?
It really would depend at what level. I bring the private equity kingpins back. They've been allowed to run rampant through our neighborhoods in America, buy up all these foreclosures, and they've crowded out your natural first-time home buyer. So home prices have been run right back up.
Mm-hmm. Even in a place like Texas, where it's nothing but growth for
Texas.
Well,
we've grown, that's true.
Right.
But now our residential real estate prices have played a nice little game of catch-up.
Yes.
Would you take your money out of the bank while you still can?
I don't think we're there. I don't think we're there.
We're headed
on that.
But
would I take my money out of the casino? Yes.
Yeah.
Meaning the stock market?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And the bond market. People do not understand how overvalued as stocks are, bonds are much more overvalued.
Where do you put it? Just in a bank?
Why, you keep talking about safes. But no, I mean, there are very decent places that you can put your cash and get a little bit of return and try and hang steady with inflation.
Is there anything to say for, like I do banking with a local bank who doesn't sell my mortgage, they hold it, You know, I went to the local mom and pop.
A traditional bank.
Correct. And I, you know, or what kind of loans do you make? And they're very, very rigid. Do you look at that or a credit union as a place that you can trust more than like Citi or any of these bigger groups?
Oh, I mean, I think the world as we know it will end if one of these gigantic banks goes away. Do you really see those lobbyists standing still for that?
No.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, I don't. So, one more thought. It used to be that people like Warren Buffett were the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And people like Warren Buffett, he's still living in the same house. He's still married to the same woman. He still, you know, yes, he has a Boeing business jet, but he could easily be
drives
mistaken.
An old truck, right. All of those kinds of things, supposedly.
He could be mistaken for a middle class mm-hmm. guy easily if you didn't know it was Warren Buffett. The same thing with Walden, or was his name Walden from Walmart?
Walton. Sam Walton.
You know, those that's a different era. Now everyone wants to live like the Kardashians.
Oh, flash is the new black. Glenn,
correct.
You got to flaunt it.
Right.
Wear it.
Everybody is up there and everybody thinks they deserve that lifestyle. So
that's what being entitled is all about.
Correct. So when we've had crashes before, you didn't have this stick it in your face kind of mentality, which leads to a screw you on the rich side. I should be living that life. What happens to society? Are you concerned? Is anybody at the Fed concerned about the societal ramifications of this?
I wish they were. I wish they understood what's going to happen to these pensions.
How can they be so smart?
And 401ks? Because they have pensions for life with guaranteed returns. They're fine.
So they don't care. They just don't care.
They're able to be oblivious. They're set. They'll be fine.
You definitely, because I made this point earlier, you definitely do seem to be assigning bad intent.
When I first started at the Fed, I will tell you that I thought that there were noble intentions and that they really did want the best for everybody. My mind was changed after the crisis because they didn't change their approach. They knew people, millions upon millions upon millions of people had been harmed by their failed policies, and they did nothing to change their ways. So does that make me angry and make me think that you've gone from unintentional to intended? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or is it a case of, because I know a few people who are at that level, and I just can't believe, every time I talk to him, I'm like, how can you be so blind? And is it mistakes were made, but not by me? That kind of mentality that you just are living in a world of cognitive dissonance, that you just can't admit that what you were doing has caused so much misery.
You know, the reason I wrote the book and the reason it took so long to write the book was that I needed to be sure that it was in their words. And I just went back and quote it from the transcripts, from the FOMC meetings, from the Federal Reserve's meetings, and you just watched the hubris and blindness become willful blindness over time. And I'm sorry, but you have to, if you're going to be put in such a major leadership position, you have to know when to step back and say, I was wrong. Be a big man, be a big woman, grow up, take responsibility.
Doesn't end well because nobody's going to do that.
Well,
the name of the book is Fed Up, An Insider's View. And I warn you, it is, there's no conspiratorial stuff to it. It's not mm-hmm. secret star chambers or any of that nonsense. This is all out in the open, and some of it is all out in the open, but there are no it's not what the conspiracy theorists want to make it.
No, I've
it's
disappointed
just sheer
them.
Greed.
Yep. I really don't have aluminum foil coming out of my ears.
Right.
I don't.
Does that help the Fed to have those crazy conspiracy theories out there?
It certainly validates their sense of self because they know they're not some secretive order. Right. They know that. They're just really boring.
And it helps.
And wrong.
Right. And it helps people dismiss the truth about the Fed.
Sure.
Because you're like, you can immediately say, oh, okay, Mr. Tinfoil Hat.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same theory behind why the Obama administration continually played up the birther nonsense.
Correct.
Because it helped them.
Right.
It helped them.
Sure.
It made their critics look like lunatics.
Right.
So.
No, there's nothing lunatic in the book.
No, there's not. Danielle, I thank you for your bravery because I know who you're taking on. And you're not taking on small potatoes. You're taking on the most powerful in the world. And thank you for your courage for speaking out. Thank you. Name of the book is Fed Up, An Insider's Take on Why the Federal Reserve is Bad for America. Pick it up if you want to know the truth and you want to know what's coming. And I highly recommend that you listen to what she just said about the possible coming economic storm and prepare yourself.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
All right, I'm going to tell you the truth. We were scared to death of her.
Yeah, I mean,
and we didn't want to say anything.
Come on. You can't trust people with three names.
No,
you can't.
Right?
Danielle DiMartino Booth.
John Wilkes Booth.
Right.
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Mark David Chapman.
Serial killers. All
killers. Of them,
so. Jeffrey Dahmer.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
No, that's
right?
Not.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Cher.
Yes. Cher.
I think
Cher.
This has fallen apart.
Hey, Madonna.
I think this has fallen apart here at the end, but really? We're pretty sure. She's either really credible and has all the, or she's a serial killer.
Yeah, and you can't trust her.
We just don't know. But the only evidence that we have that she's a serial killer is three names. And
what more do you need? I mean,
I don't think a lot.
It's pretty hardcore proof right there.
I mean, really, shouldn't we just round up everybody who has three names?
Before they kill again.
Before
yes.
they kill again?
Yes.
Agreed. I wonder what the reason, because it does happen a lot. I would assume it's people. Like, why does that occur? Because it's not necessarily that they were being called.
I think to differentiate them from everybody else who has that name.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Dahmer was such a... Nobody has that name.
Yeah.
So
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. But Chapman, that's pretty...
Mm-hmm.
Booth. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
They're both named Booth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. That's her last name.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, we didn't even go there. Same. What's the relationship? She could kill again. She could be killing in a parking lot right now.
Yeah, at least it's not in here, though. I mean, if you're out in the parking lot, well, why are you in the parking lot?
I'm telling you, if we were up in a box seat right now, I think we'd all be dead.
Luckily, we never have tickets that are that good.
Likely, yeah, no
kidding. Yeah. Luckily, we're always in the back of the.
Hey, they have a verdict in the Alex Jones trial.
Yes, oh yeah,
oh,
late last night.
Wait, mm-hmm.
It was great.
Really so. And the thing was, does he get custody of the kids or not?
Yes, right. That was the question. Trial.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that. Yeah. I mean, that's
big.
That's
big.
Worth sitting through the news of the day to hear.
Yes, it is.
We tell you now, but we just had a big bowl of chili, so I don't remember what happened. I'm going to have to look it up.
That's funny.
All right, back in a minute.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America.
welcome to the program. I think we have to start with some breaking news. A huge celebrity going through a wicked custody battle. It involves chili, it involves space aliens, and it involves birth certificates. Oh, and children that we didn't know existed, fluoride in the water,
gay frogs.
Gay frogs, well, they don't start off gay.
Suicidal shrimp.
I mean, it's a pretty...
Globalists.
It takes all of it into account.
The Gulf
verdict
flags.
Is in. We go there right now.
Gulf of Tonkin.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
House Republicans are putting up a bill for health care this week. Yay! Good. Hopefully we get to pass this bill before we get to find out what's in this bill. We'll find out a little bit more on that coming up in just a little while. Also, an Apple executive says artificial intelligence is going to help humans remember every memory, including memories that they don't want to remember, which is strange because they are also working on technology that will help erase memories we don't want to remember. So we got a little bit of all of it.
You know what we need to do?
You can have it all.
You just need to put it in a chip. So yeah. You can take the chip out and you can erase, see it all happen in front of you, and then if you want to keep it, you keep it.
Did you see that? Did you see the petition going around about this, which is funding for being able to wipe your memories, this time specifically of the Bill Nye sex video that came out this week? Like, they want to fund just wiping the memory of that.
Right.
All the other memories, whatever. It's, you know, but
can I
ask, do support some government funding.
Can I ask you a question? If there was that technology available, and you found a chip that was marked memories erased, and it was in your handwriting, and you knew that you could erase memories and keep them on a chip, and you found that, and you had placed it someplace where only you would really kind of know, you kind of find this, and you realize, oh my gosh, I've had that operation or that procedure to erase memories. What would you do with the chip? You saved it for a reason. You find it. What do you do with it?
This series of events was contemplated in the documentary with Jim Carrey, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And this was sort of the premise
of that movie.
Particular documentary.
It wasn't a documentary, it was a movie.
So he knew this girl, and he knew he had a good relationship with her, but he decided to erase the memories. And then the question was, do you try to find your way back to recapture them? Because, I mean, there's a reason you erased them, but then...
There's a reason you had them.
There's a reason you kept them. So, I don't know. I mean, I think... I tend to think you make the best judgments when you have a sober mind, and sorry, Jeffy, and you are sitting there thinking, okay, here's the rational course of action that I should follow, right? So after your memory has been erased and you see the chip, then it's panic, it's speculation, you're not making that point rationally. So you should probably get rid of the chip, or at least hide it from yourself. Send it.
You would get rid of the chip or hide it from yourself.
I think that's the best course of action, whether I would actually
Jeffy.
Do it or not.
Get rid of the chip, or you know, somehow or another experience it. Give it to somebody else and say,
you have to experience it.
Can
I mean,
you
in the
look
documentary
at
with Robin Williams called The Final Cut,
okay,
when people have the memory chips,
yeah.
And he is the editor of that.
We've drifted far from Star Wars references this hour. We apologize. We're deep in it here.
What would you do?
You got to watch it.
You would watch them, even though you know that you erased them for a reason.
Well, do you?
If you're Jeffy, though,
your memory's blocked. Somebody could have done it.
If you're Jeffy, though, you're not going to trust yourself.
I watch them.
You watch them?
Yeah.
Yeah, why did you erase them in the first place?
I don't know.
We don't know.
Stupid. We don't know.
They were erased, exactly.
But I'd be too curious as to what it was, and I'd have to watch that.
You can always re-erase it, right?
I guess so.
I mean, this every 3 days.
Twice, though.
Yeah, every 3 days.
Back in there.
And you'd be like, this time I'm hiding it in a better place. All right. Let's give you the update of the case of the century, as we like to call it. InfoWars megastar, actor, and just an all-around good guy.
Oh, yeah.
Alex Jones.
I will say the money involved in his company is apparently pretty outrageous.
No kidding.
His parents testified that they were both making millions from the business, too. I mean, how much money is in that supplement business that he's got? That's just incredible.
Well, if you can find tree bark and mash it up and put it in a pill and people buy it for $49 a bottle, the profit margin's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeffy would do it in a second. No, I'm sure all those supplements are very solid. I should clarify. But it's interesting because, first of all, we know that Alex Jones, it's not even his real name. You'll find that out tonight on The Wonderful World of Stew, 8 p.m. on Blaze TV. But
you cannot stop doing that.
But it's interesting because here's the case where someone believed it was a good idea to marry Alex Jones. That's part of the story, and it needs to be part of the case.
Well, that is part of it. I mean, she lost custody of the children.
Well,
what has to happen?
You got to believe she's somewhat unusual to begin with, right?
Not only did she marry him,
if not just flat out nuts herself, because how do you marry that guy?
I mean, not only did she marry him, children.
Children with the guy.
Right. And now she was involved in InfoWars at the beginning, I guess. So she was on this bandwagon. Now she says it's a hate site. She went through all the terrible things.
It was all
things.
Good when she was there.
Now the judge went to great pains to not allow her to enter in some of his craziest videos.
InfoWars.
Because they didn't want it to be based on politics. Now, I mean, it's kind of rough because it's one thing if you have someone making a joke on air, you can't say, well, that's their real persona, right? But when you have a man who is, screaming at passersby, threatening violence on people fairly routinely, who is
taking his shirt off,
taking his shirt off in
moments of rage.
Yeah, I mean, it's InfoWars.
Yeah, and it's very strange, and it's blatantly his beliefs, right? I mean, like,
yes.
So,
well, his attorney says he's an actor.
Yeah, he says he's a performance actor. So it's kind of a weird line. Like, for example, they allowed one video in where he was screaming at people in a crowded situation and seemingly obviously inebriated. Okay, just screaming at passersby.
Huh.
Was he just testing the alcohol content?
Because that's
just like the feds do.
He monitors.
Just like law enforcement.
Monitors marijuana strength yearly.
Yes. Yeah,
that's what he said. That's what he testified to. Mm-hmm. He smokes marijuana, but he only smokes it once a year.
Just like law enforcement.
Because he believes that George Soros has
increased the strength.
Yes.
He's making the marijuana stronger. The frog's gay.
Yeah, and this, of course, which is frightening. I mean, he's serious here. I love this one.
I was told by a genetic engineer
about
a project they were on in England once, and I never told the story on air because it's so fantastical.
So fantastical. Oh, God.
Oh, God. They had tanks, people with gills, and they're little babies, and they were in there just gulping, clawing at the sides. You see a turtle at the zoo, and it wants out, and you feel for it?
No.
They got humanoids crossed with fish and stuff. I mean, we are screwed, people. I mean, do you understand that?
For some reason, she did not enter that into evidence. I don't understand.
How is that not entered?
That's got to be performance arts.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Do you guys this is an honest question. I could be heartless. Have you ever felt for a turtle in a zoo?
No.
I've never. All seem like they're really happy. That's where they're supposed to be, in water. Like, isn't that their thing?
Yeah, it's gulping and it's clawing at the glass.
Wait, turtles don't gulp.
They're half human.
I love the, I've never told on there because it's so fantastical.
Yeah, like that's a real
and then it's like,
concern for him.
I know, real concern. He would never do it. And then the, oh, God.
And in major prestigious reports, government studies,
find that shrimp are just swimming right up to birds and being eaten.
Now, this is not fantastical.
No, that's not fantastical at all.
It's because they're dumping Prozac in the water, and they're just high on life, and they think they can take these birds on. And so they walk right up to the bird and say,
eat me.
Eat me.
And they do.
And they do.
So this trial presented something really interesting for Alex Jones, because he was essentially saying, he was in the opposite position that he normally is. Usually the status quo is evil. We have to change it. Everyone involved has bad intent. They're all crazy. They're all out to hurt you. And that was essentially her argument, which was, he's crazy. The status quo is bad. He's nuts. He's out to hurt these children. He can't be trusted. He's out of control. And he had to say, no, the status quo is great. I'm in control. Everything's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Oh, this is all performance art. It's not that big of a deal. So those two things went up against each other.
Well, he had to do anything he had to do to protect his children.
And, you know, as funny and hilarious as I see him as a human being, this is a sad story. It's a family being torn apart.
He's
clearly nuts. I don't know about her. She may not be. But he clearly is crazy. And to see this happen with kids on the line is not fun. And nobody likes this stuff. But it's interesting because they went through this whole case in this video that I was telling you about, where he's screaming at people and is seemingly intoxicated. The judge forced them to remove the phrase when he was screaming at people that 1776 is here again. Like, he was basically calling for another revolution because it was too political. It's that type of stuff that they actually took out. They went to great pains to avoid InfoWars being part of this, really. They wouldn't allow her to put any of the crazy videos in, with the exception of very limited content that was outside of this. And her argument is, look, just because he's doing it on TV does not mean that it's not part of this. I mean, you can't, this is his life. This is his business. It's his livelihood. You can't just dismiss all of it because he's doing it in front of a camera. Usually that's more proof when you do something in front of a camera. People here, they're saying, well, it's in front of a camera, so it doesn't count. Now, look, there's obviously, there are times where he does sketches and stuff on the show.
Yeah, I mean, Alec Baldwin, you know, playing the bad guy, you know, in 30 Rock.
Right, you can't say that.
I can't say that that's him.
Right.
That's not what she was talking about.
Of course not. He would try to use that as a defense. So they went to the jury. They took about nine or ten hours to deliberate. They had to get 10 out of 12 jurors to agree on a solution. Came back with a late night verdict last night, and the verdict went in favor of Kelly Jones, the wife. Now, the way the verdict works is they get joint custody, but Kelly Jones gets to decide who the children live with. Now, she spent she got a few million dollars on the divorce, has spent almost all of it trying to get custody back. Is saying she finally
has it. How did she lose custody? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a mom lose custody of their children. That's highly unusual.
We have heard that in Texas. I've not been divorced in Texas yet.
At
least not yet. I mean, you never know. I could come walk home to papers any day. But she so far has not divorced me, thankfully. So I've heard from people who've called in and stuff that I've read that Texas is much more friendly to the fathers than some of the states that others have been divorced in, perhaps that are sitting in this room, or perhaps sitting on the couch with me.
Oh, right, that's what you're talking about.
So,
in Connecticut, dads have zero chance of getting
unless the moms don't want it or have like major drug problems.
Yeah, I mean, you know, mom is shooting up in front of the judge. He'll consider it.
Yes.
I'll take her heroin syringe into consideration.
Florida's kind of the same way. Not that I'm really familiar with the situation, but judges tend to go with the mother.
It's usually in every state.
It is typically favored that way. However, that was what made us kind of like suspicious, right? Like, why would he have custody? But the judge did rule.
But she won, basically.
Yeah, she won. She gets to choose where the kids go, and of course she's going to choose they go with her. Now, this is the same situation that existed before, except it was Alex's choice. Right. And Alex chose that the kids live with him, also chose to give her very limited visitation.
He was making her come around one of the issues for the kids, yeah.
The other thing that seems to be interesting here is that the kids seem to really be siding with the dad, with Alex. Yeah, like they don't want to go with mom. At least that's what the reporting says.
How do you patch that family back together?
It is really rough.
This is so sad.
Will she take them to a place where the water is safe? Because
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay.
I mean, I hope really, she doesn't live in a place like that.
What's really sad, though, is if that is performance art and he's gotten rich off of performance art. Mm-hmm. And let's say he's a great dad somehow, horrible human being because of what he's doing at work, but he's a great dad, and she happens to be a really bad mom. I mean, this is really sad. The kids want to live with dad.
Yeah, it strikes me. I was thinking about that, of like, you have these such these drastic highs and lows, and sometimes after those huge achievements, you have these things that destroy them. Like, here's Alex Jones, who is a nobody for all intents and purposes, who went through this entire thing screaming about how bad George Bush was, a 9/11 conspiracy theorist, has built this giant business, millions of dollars, and then got his candidate elected, who's president of the United States. They're talking about InfoWars getting White House press credentials. And in the middle of all of that, he loses his children who want to stay with him. I mean, sad. Life sucks, man.
It is sad.
It's because of the freaking frogs turning gay.
The Glenn Beck Program.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. We are one.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
On Monday, we're taking your phone calls. All Monday morning, we're going to start taking your phone calls about Trump's first 100 days. Enough of the experts and just looking up at the TVs. A Yale professor says, I don't care what a Yale professor says. I'd like to hear what you have to say about Trump's first 100 days, and that'll be on Monday. But here's a highlight of some of the things.
I was thinking about how one of the things we were always critical about Obama on was executive orders.
Yes.
And but we haven't been hammering Trump on that. And I was thinking, he's been, obviously, he's bragging about how many he's done, right? It's kind of been his sell on the first 100 days.
Well, again, it's the scope. It's not the number. It's the scope of the executive orders. Like this week, he did an executive order on the monuments. It was nothing. It was an executive order to start studying them.
I was trying to be introspective and realize, am I not criticizing Trump because he's a Republican as much as I would Obama? But I don't think that's true. Listen to this, because this is kind of what he's done in the first 100 days with executive orders. Trump's order on reorganizing the government simply directed his budget director to devise a plan for reorganizing the government.
See?
His order for the opioid crisis set up a commission. His orders on rebuilding the military, streamlining permits for manufacturers, and preventing violence against law enforcement instructed cabinet secretaries to devise plans to achieve those goals, which they were presumably going to do anyway. His orders on trade deficits, drug cartels, and burdensome tax regulations called for reports on those issues, essentially homework assignments issued on national television. Yesterday, as he signed an order regarding aluminum imports, he complained that foreign dumping was destroying the U.S. industry. But his order, like a similar one he signed last week about steel imports, did not impose any retaliatory duties. It just called for expediting an ongoing investigation of the issue. So, I mean, really, a lot of these executive orders haven't actually done anything. And maybe that's the reason why we haven't felt the need to be as critical, because none of this has done anything. It's just a bunch of commissions and reports.
No, it's an executive order. It's the CEO saying, hey, guys, in this department, I want you to study this. Hey, you in this department, I want you to come up with a plan for this. That is a real executive order. That's not a game-changing, law-bending executive order.
Could have just sent an email, but yeah, you're right.
Right, but he's good with TV, that's why.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Operation Underground Railroad. Tim Ballard is joining us with an update on some kids that have recently been rescued. Thanks. To you in this audience, thank you for your support on trying to end slavery and free some children. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Hey, great. Thanks for having us back.
Yeah.
So you just, can you talk about the operation that you just did?
Yes, we just got back recently. It was amazing. We brought your own chief investigator with us, so he could be eyes on. And I'm lucky to bring Matt Osborne, formerly of the CIA and State Department, and he led that operation. And some amazing things happened. And I'm going to let Matt tell you what they are.
Thank you. So again, thanks to your audience, unbelievable, the resources. We were able to go down to South America, as specific as we'll be now. In the coming days, we can talk a little bit more. There, I believe in the small little place near the Amazon, there was a professor, a high school physical education teacher, pimping out 9 of his students, both in positive ways. Hey, if you do this, you get good grades, a little bit of money, and in negative ways. If you don't do this, if you don't allow these men to do whatever they want, I will tell your parents, I will do all these things. So we were so blessed. We went down, we had our aftercare team in place. Minutes before the operation, Operation Underground Railroad sent a prayer request out to all of our supporters, many probably in this audience, and we had a miracle. Not only were all the girls rescued, 10 of them total, 2 traffickers arrested, this teacher and another individual, despicable individual. Jason will talk more about it next week. But our aftercare team not only was on the ground, they were able to go in with the South American country's Child Protective Services equivalent, be there in the minutes after the rescue. They stayed all afternoon, all evening, all overnight with the
girls.
That's
never, that doesn't happen.
Does not happen.
Doesn't happen. You guys, the worst thing about your job is, well, besides having to see what you have to see, you never get the satisfaction of seeing the kids rescued, them knowing that you're a good guy. They see you guys being hauled away in handcuffs, and they just think you're a dirtbag.
Oftentimes, yeah, they're scoffing at us, like, yeah, you get yours for doing this. And we're going, no, we were here for you. Right.
I've been spit on, Glenn. They spit on you as we're on the ground.
And it's tough. It's tough.
And so this time, they did. I mean, you got to see, and the joy in many of them. How did you find out about a teacher doing this?
So we're very fortunate to have great relationships with the federal governments in several countries through the U.S. Embassy, through Homeland Security. They, in this case, said, we don't have the resources to go to the outer reaches of our country, but we will give you the green light, your Operation Underground Railroad operatives. Go in and see what you can find. We sent 3 Americans about a month or two ago just in this area. They took an Amazon River cruise. They started getting the word around that they were looking for a certain type of product. And one person led to another who led to this teacher. Real miracle that we were able to find.
So this was a fishing trip, really. I mean, you go on, I mean, I've seen you do this, like, you know, in Bangkok and in Haiti, where you go where the sex trafficking is happening. But this, again, you only found that teacher not from a tip, but just from a fishing expedition.
That's correct. And again, that's why we're so grateful for the resources that allow us to go out there, to be on a jump team, to jump at a moment's notice, to go where this need is. And this is how this happened.
Yeah, and you think about how there's places in the world that are so dark, the darkest corners of the planet, where kids are being held with zero hope that anyone's going to find them. Their own governments are saying, we don't even work up there. And those traffickers know that. And so we become the only hope, that because we will go into the places that even governments won't go or can't go. And to just have that hope out there for those kids who are locked up somewhere right now.
Do you have any idea, did the parents or did the school have any idea any of this stuff was going on?
The school said they did not. The professor was summarily fired 3 hours after this news hit. He is no longer, he's in jail now. They claim that they did not know anything. The parents, from what we get, half the parents claim to have no idea, and then half the parents now in the interviews, there are a couple single families, single parent families who said, I was afraid something like this would happen. But our aftercare team gave them sensibilization training, anti-trafficking training in the days following this operation that happened about 9 days or so.
So what happens to, I just saw a video this morning, and it happened a while back. I was surprised. Pat and I watched it this morning. I was so shocked that we didn't know about it. A woman, a girl, lives in Ohio. She was, I think, 17 at the time. She was raped by a guy who these 2 girls met. I'm not sure exactly how it came down, but her friend periscoped this rape, and instead of putting her phone down to help, she just periscoped the whole thing and was responding to the comments. And she was like, I was getting so many likes, and she just was, I mean, it was crazy. And you see this now 18-year-old girl on her little, you know, girl bed that all of our daughters had grown up, and she's vacant. She's just gone. What happens to these girls who were used by a teacher like this? And the parents, do the parents get help?
Some of them will have a very steep road back, obviously. From my limited time with these girls, remember, I was the bad guy, right, in the party. I was with them for about 30 minutes while the deal was going down. I am very positive that these girls will still be able to come back. They seem very full of life. They seemed a little bit shy, a little bit, you know, scared of us, but we talked about their dreams. We talked about what they wanted to do. They talked about wanting to be travel agents, tour guides, public administration. So I have a feeling, especially because we have this great relationship now, our aftercare with the prosecutor, with their Child Protective Services equivalent, we will be in touch with them in the weeks and months to come, making sure that their road is paved.
Tim, people say that this doesn't, well, you know, why aren't you doing stuff in America? Well, there are things that happen that you can't necessarily talk about because, I mean, we can't even give you the name of the country on this particular thing. There are things that are happening in right around America that you don't necessarily want to talk about. But beyond that, a lot of these places, especially over in Asia, the guys who are doing this are Americans, and one of them was a teacher that was caught.
Absolutely. Yeah, we do work in the United States. We don't talk as much about it, but we do. But even when we don't, as you know, because you've been with us, we target those Americans. Look, these are the people that live next door to us, but their inhibitions are down when they're traveling for sex in Asia or Latin America. We get them there. And when we do, they don't come home. They rot in a foreign prison, and our kids are safe. So working over there is protecting our kids here.
Because it gets worse and worse and worse when they go on these sex vacations.
Oh, yeah.
You can't turn it off when you come home. Can you talk about that teacher that was here in America that you guys busted?
Yeah. I mean, this was a teacher that you know, was teaching middle school kids and taking all of his vacations over in Asia and exploiting kids and people there. And we were able to catch him because he had just an enormous collection of child pornography, including stuff that he had produced. And there he is living these two lives, and then he's with our kids, teaching them, you know, French or whatever he's teaching. I mean, it's we've got to root these guys out.
Are these guys generally married or single?
Both. I mean, that doesn't seem to deter them if they're married.
We just lost two operatives over in the Middle East that have been working with us to save moms and children from ISIS. Dad's usually killed, then mom and the girls are taken and used as sex slaves, or worse. How dangerous is it for you guys to go out? I mean, you're not dealing with ISIS per se. How dangerous is this for you guys?
You know, I think it's very dangerous. I mean, we're because our whole job. I mean, we call ourselves Operation Underground Railroad because we're trying to get inspiration from what that group did. And what did they do? They infiltrated the darkness. And so everything we do, whether it's online or physically, and the more dangerous part obviously is the physical infiltration of these black markets. I mean, Matt and his team, they were infiltrating people who are selling kids. This is we're disturbing their economic flow, their reputations.
And in some countries that shall remain nameless, you know, the cartels will come after you here.
Oh yeah, there's operations that we've been on, that we've conducted, that have been successful, that no one even knows we've done. There's times we won't announce anything, and we wish everyone could know what we're doing all the time, but we can't because we tap into something like that.
If you want to become involved and an abolitionist, I urge you to go to OURrescue.org. That's OURrescue.org.
even a $5 monthly pledge goes a long way. You know, we all think that, oh, you know, gee, if I were there, I would have stopped slavery. Really? The slavery is a lot bigger than it was during the slave trade that we all read about in history books. A lot bigger. And are we doing anything? Just like in the olden days, people didn't want to look at it. They didn't want to think about it. They just wanted to put it out of their mind. Become an abolitionist. Join us today. OURrescue.org. That's OURrescue.org. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
So Bill Nye, the science guy, who is not a scientist, this is a Disney creation, is now doing something on Netflix where he is talking about the science of you choose your own gender. Unfortunately for Bill Nye, the science guy, when he was actually talking about science, it went a little something like this. This is from his original science show, Bill Nye, the Science Guy.
I'm a girl. Could have just as easily been a boy, though, because the probability of becoming a girl is always 1 in 2. See, inside each of our cells are these things called chromosomes. And they control whether we become a boy or a girl. Your mom has 2X chromosomes in all of her cells, and your dad has 1X and 1Y chromosome in each of his cells.
Right.
Before you're born, your mom gives you one of her chromosomes, and your dad gives you one of his. Mom always gives you an X. And if dad gives you an X too, then you become a girl. But if he gives you his Y, then you become a boy. See, there are only 2 possibilities.
Wait, what?
XX, a girl, or XY, a boy.
How hateful.
The chance of becoming either a boy or a girl is always 1 in 2.
Huh.
A 50-50
no.
chance.
I thought there were 72
way.
Different.
No, there's right. more than that now.
Is X, you're a girl. Sorry. Sorry. Y, you're a boy.
No.
That was
a show from the caveman days?
I know.
Yeah,
Bill
yeah,
Nye,
yeah.
the Science Guy, 1996. There's two choices. You're a girl or
and
you're
only,
a boy.
It's 1 in 2. You're one either two. This or that. Uh-huh. And it all comes down to the science of your genes, the chromosome.
You're not pangender. You're not G-gender. You're not cisgender. You're either a
Go
boy
ahead.
Or a girl.
Go ahead. What other genders?
Oh,
my gosh. What a hate
I don't
want to
leave anybody out, so I'm going to stop right there because there's what?
Oh,
are there 700 now?
I think there's over 90 now.
I was suffering from sexism.
So, you know, what's very interesting here is how we made it through the dark ages back in 1994.
96.
Uh-huh. I mean, you know, geez, at 11, you know, no, 21 years ago, we were sitting here thinking that there were only 2 possibilities.
You were going to either be a boy or a girl.
Right, but now science,
oh, man.
Science has changed. And Stu, you're more scientific minded on
sure.
the show.
Mm-hmm.
Explain the science that has changed.
Well,
we've learned that the chromosome X and Y thing is...
There's either XX, XY, or...
Or how did it change? What happened?
The problem was, basically, they thought there was only X and Y.
Right.
And now we, of course, know there are 26 letters in the alphabet.
Yeah.
So we know there are 676 total genders
okay.
That you can have.
So you could, like, be a B and a D.
Yeah, a BD or a Jeffy, a BM.
Why would I?
That's a big male.
Big male, yeah. Yeah, that's very big. Very big.
He got the big from his mom and the male from his dad. Or it could have been the other way around.
It might have been the other way.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I think that's what it is. They forgot about the other letters. They forgot about the other letters.
Okay.
It must be, because that would be a great follow-up to Bill Nye. Hey, we saw this clip from you in 1996. Can you point to the study where they discovered the new chromosomes for what you're doing now?
Yeah.
Like, is there one?
Show us, take us on that journey without talking about feelings, because we know that's very scientific. Show us the studies.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.